All right, just quickly in review, again, the theme for the whole study of the book is, again, back in chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, Paul is stating this emphatically. He is not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. So he's been emphasizing the power of God's salvation. He's going to talk extensively about how that's going to be acquired through Jesus Christ later on. But mainly in the first two chapters, Paul has been doing what?
He's been stating the case that even though historically the Gentiles started with not giving honor and reverence to God and then following down that slippery slope to complete and utter wickedness, he's laying, shall we say, almost an argumentative trap to get the Jews to understand you're in the same boat.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point, John. He's condemned Jews or Gentiles in chapter 1 very extensively. No one would have had an argument about that. And then in chapter 2, he starts into this, what did we call it? What term did we use? Where he's having this debate or discussion. A diatribe. He starts into this diatribe, but he doesn't identify initially who he is specifically speaking to or talking, having this discussion with. As we know through the letter, he's really talking to the Jews, but he uses this as a transition to help the Jews understand exactly what John is saying. They are equally guilty. Now, the problem that he's dealing with in chapter 2, in dealing with the Jews, is what fundamental problem? Quickly, just what was it? What was their mindset? Okay, they thought they were justified by law. They thought
they thought they were right,
but they thought they were right based on who they were. Who were they? Children of Abraham. The descendants of the promise. The keepers and those who were issued the law. Now let me ask you something. Do you think you can understand the Jews' concept about really who they were and how important they were? I mean, weren't they really God's special people? Yeah, they were. They were. They were the people of God. In all of the Old Testament, in the whole record, since from Abraham on, the Jews were designated as God's people, those whom the promise of the salvation of the world would come through. Well, okay. That, to me, I mean, if that was said about me, I'd feel pretty good about myself. I was born into this. I'd feel pretty good about who I am. And so the Jews had developed this sense of their specialness. And as a result of that, they had believed a little bit too much. And as Paul is going to address here, he's going to identify that their confidence was in the wrong thing. But before he does that, where we ended up in verse 11, after talking about the Gentiles and then talking about this in this diatribe, this man whom is debating with Paul about their righteousness, how does he say, how are you going to escape? How are you going to escape the judgment of God? You who do the things that you condemn the Gentiles for. In verses 12 through 16, we get into where we're going to start right now, where Paul says, right in preceding this, God, he says in verse 11, there is no partiality with God. The Jews would have agreed with everything Paul has said up to this point, primarily because the Jews still thought that Paul was talking about whom? The Gentiles. He's having this debate, but it's still, he's not clearly delineated that it's the Jews he is talking about. Now in verses 12 through 16, he's going to narrow and hone in his focus specifically on comparing and contrasting the two groups. And he does so through the use of what particular topic? The law. All right? Now, this law that Paul's talking about creates a lot of debate and discussion over whether he's talking about the codified law of the Jews, the law of Moses, or whether he's talking about just law in general and making it a universal application. All right? Now, I'll tell you, well, actually, before we actually discuss it, let's just read it. But let's read it remembering who is Paul addressing, even though they don't know it at this time. He's addressing the Jews. He's talking to the Jews through this diatribe of this man. Okay? So let's look at it where he says. Verse 12. For all who have sinned without law will also perish without law. And all who have sinned under the law will be judged by law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law will be justified. For when the Gentiles who do not have the law do instinctively the things of the law, these, not having the law, are a law to themselves, in that they show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and their thoughts alternately accusing or else defending them. On the day when, according to my gospel, God will judge the secrets of men through Christ Jesus. All right, this word law that's written here is written in every occasion through the Greek word nomos. Okay, that's the term that's used. It's talking about a law, okay? Written, codified, specific, parametered law. The context of how it's used determines whether he's speaking specifically to the Jews, talking about the law of Moses, or whether he's talking about in general, a reference to general law. He's been talking about both. And I think in the context, we're able to determine what it is he's talking about. But at the end of the discussion, regardless of what you figure out, is he talking about the law of Moses or is he talking about a general law of conscience? At the end of it, it doesn't matter. At the end of the discussion, the result is the same. And I want you to think about that as we look at it. At the end of when Paul finishes his discussion on this, he's going to bring it all together. And it's not going to make any difference to Paul whether the Gentiles or the Jews are making this argument. It won't matter. All right? But to the Jews, when they see this word, law, what would have they thought? The law of Moses, which is referred to as what? The Torah, all right? The Torah, the first five books where God reveals the specific law from Mount Sinai to the Jews, how they were to live, how they were to be his people, the rules that they were to follow in order to be in compliance with his regulations. That's how the Jews would have viewed this use of the word law, all right? Now, the Jews, and here again is the issue. The Jews thought that they were God's special people simply because of the law. And it's not just going to be simply because of the law. It's going to be also, as Paul says in chapter 2, because of what else? Of the law. What specific practice of the law?
Circumcision.
They are going to believe that because they are the the keepers of this law, because they are identified by this particular physical surgical procedure, they are the people of God. And what's the point that Paul's going to make? Is that what made them ever the people of God? No, it's not. It was a sign of the covenant. It was a sign of the promise. They were the ones who were the descendants of those who were given the promise to Abraham. But those in and of themselves did not make them the people of God. It did separate them from the rest of the world. And it should have been the basis for what made them separate and different. But in and of itself, the law and circumcision, Paul is going to say, did not make them the people of God. As a matter of fact, what did it do? What does Paul say in here? That the last bullet point there on the slide says, it didn't make them the special people of God. It was their standard of judgment. It was, Paul's going to make the point, going to be what causes them to be unrighteous before God. And there'll be a lot of discussion later about that as well. We'll get into that when the time comes. But Paul's going to be making this point. All right? Now, I put a yellow slide up here that hopefully will be a better contrast than the other one, because I guess that it was still hard for some folks to see. Tell me if it doesn't work, we'll do something else by Wednesday, all right? But hopefully this will be able to see. Now let me ask you this. Why did the Jews believe that God would be partial to them on the day of judgment? We've already said this. We've already talked about it. What two things? They were the descendants of Abraham by virtue of what? Sign? Circumcision. And they were the keepers of the law of Moses, all right? So, the point he starts off with, and he's going to make these points in two different parts of the chapter, but he starts off by talking about they possessed the law of Moses. The Jew, as you know from the book of Matthew, primarily, because who dealt with this legalistic mindset of the Jews? Jesus did. They were legalists. Think about the extent that the Jews went to determine and to define what was acceptable under the law and what was a violation of the law. They went to great painstaking detail to work all of those things out. Paul's going to address that in here as well. Therefore, the Jews thought, like we talked about when we first began, they were pretty special. And as a result, they developed this self-righteous attitude that they themselves were righteous when compared to whom? To the Gentiles. It's exactly right. We, because of who we are righteous and just. And all the rest of you are what?
Condemned.
Sinners. All right? Yes, sir, brother. That is an excellent point. That is exactly the point that I've spent the whole first 8 minutes trying to say. Very well done, all right? I'm going to write that down and use that word next time and save us a lot of time. All right, so thank you, brother. That's exactly right. They were entitled. They did have that sense that because of whom they were, they would receive that. So here we go. Paul's going to begin chipping away at this. All right, and he's going to start by talking about the law of Moses, how they viewed the law of Moses. And then in the latter part of chapter 2, he's going to talk about the covenant act of circumcision and how that in and of itself as well. But again, let me just remind you, Paul's going to use this and have this discussion, and at the end of it, what we were talking about, he culminates in chapter 3, verses 19 and 20. And I want you just to go over there, and I want to look and read this passage real quick, because it'll help set the foundation for what the point Paul's trying to make is. He says, now that we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under law. What's his point? The law is applicable to whom? To whoever is subject to it, right? The law of Moses would have been whom? The Jews. But did he also talk about a law of the Gentiles? Absolutely. The Gentiles are condemned to, the Gentiles could not be condemned if there was no standard, if there was no law. Right? So here we go. It speaks to those who are under the law that every mouth may be closed. The law, the mouth of the Jew and the mouth of the Gentile. And all the world may become accountable to God. Because by works of law, no flesh will be justified in his sight. For through law comes the knowledge of sin. In this passage, Paul brings everybody, regardless of the standard in which you will be judged, you're accountable. To the Jews, it was the Torah. To the Gentile, it was the law of the knowledge that God had given them and what he had revealed and the standard of morality. But at the end of it, everybody is what? Everyone's accountable, and everyone is guilty. That's exactly right. That every mouth may be shut. I think Paul's making an emphatic statement. You ever tell your children, don't open your mouth again? You ever said that? No. Of course we have. Well, okay, I certainly. You have no basis for your argument. Don't open your mouth again. That's where Paul is getting to. And he's going to make that point to the Jews. They're going to be the ones who are going to get the brunt of it. Because nobody really argued the point about the Gentiles' guilt. But the Jews did argue their righteousness. They did. All right? So, we'll get to that point, of course, then. Universal condemnation. That's the concept Paul's getting to. It's applicable to everyone. Law keeping does not result in what? Justification. It can't. Everyone's guilty before it. And again, when dealing with this concept of law, Paul has been talking about what people? Who has his point been to? To the Jews. So, I think back in this context, let's get back over to the context where we were starting in 12 through 16. I think it's clear, that at least in my humble understanding, that he's talking about the law of the Jews. He's specifically addressing them. All right. We've already covered this. All right. So, sorry, I can't keep up with the slides. All right. So, that was the laws that we had talked about. All right. So, let's go back into verse 12 again and look. All who have sinned without law will perish without law. Now, let me ask you this. Just based on what we've already said, all who have sinned without law will perish without law. Who do you think he's referring to? The Gentiles. All right? Because the Gentiles weren't accountable to the law of Moses. However, he indicates that they had sinned. For all who have sinned without law, is there anyone without law? Hasn't Paul made that point? Is there anyone who lives on the face of this earth that's not accountable to some law? Absolutely not. Everyone's accountable. So when he talks about those who have sinned, well, they're guilty. But they're not guilty according to the law of Moses. But they're going to perish. What's the result of those who have sinned? Death. They're going to die. They're accountable before God. They don't have any basis for justification. They're guilty because of the law that God held them to. And all who have sinned under law or the law. Now here he's referring to whom? He's talking about the Jews. But he's still talking about the same law. He's talking about the Torah. So the Gentiles lived not under the Torah, but they still sinned and are guilty. And the Jews who do live under the Torah have sinned and are guilty and will be judged by the law. What does that word judged mean?
Held accountable.
Held accountable. And when you're held accountable and found guilty, or the judge judges you, that word in the New Testament usually refers to what?
Condemnation.
That's exactly right. The Jews were being found guilty of violating the law, the Torah. It wasn't going to be what made them the special people and their righteousness. It's going to be what judges and condemns them. And that's the point that Paul's trying to make. You've sinned. That Torah that you think is such a great document that makes you so special, it's what's condemning you, because you've been found guilty. You've been judged and found what? What's the term that he uses? Lacking. You've been found lacking. You've not been able to keep the standard. Okay? So, that's the term he's talking about. Now in verses 13 and 14. 13 and 14 seem to be kind of a parenthetical statement here, based on what I've read. Now I don't, listen, I'm telling you here, based on what I've read and studied. If somebody here has got a clearer explanation or understanding of this, please share it, all right? But here's what it seems to be. So he's talking about the Gentiles are guilty, even though they're not under the Torah. The Jews are guilty while under the Torah. And then he says, for not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law will be justified. For when the Gentiles, who do not have the law, do instinctively the things of the law, not having the law, are a law to themselves. It seems like Paul is kind of just clarifying here the point he just made in verse 12 about the Gentiles and the Jews being guilty of sin, even though they're not under the same system of law. But here he says, look, you Jews, you got the law, right? You think that makes you just and righteous, right? It's not being in possession of it. It's not just hearing the law being read to you that makes you right and just. What is it? It's following it, keeping it, doing it. It's how you live your life. Has Paul not made that point repeatedly in chapter 1? Absolutely. It's how you live your life. You're guilty because you don't do what the law says. And then he brings up the Gentiles. Okay? And what does he say about the Gentiles? What parts of the law did the Gentiles keep? Did they keep the Sabbath? Did they keep the sacrificial rituals? Did they go to the temple? They didn't do any of those laws, but what part of the Torah did, or the law, did the Gentiles keep? I'm sorry? That's right. The laws which the Torah stated on morality. That's exactly right. Now look, when we read this, a lot of times we read it through the lens of trying to defend and debate modern day views which we believe to be in error, such as Calvinism. Alright? Look, there's no doubt you can't read this segment of Romans and not come away with an understanding that Paul is saying you have to do what you do matters. It makes a difference in how God views you. It makes a difference in your accountability before God. What you do makes a difference. But don't think that he is in this passage trying to debate salvation by works or salvation by grace. That's not his point. His point isn't that debate. His point is trying to tell the Jews, what you do in your life matters. You'll be judged based on what you do. What? He'll explain it again, but what is he saying when he says, what you do will be what makes you just or not? Is he saying that on that standard, you're going to be judged and found righteous or unrighteous? That's not his point. But what is he saying? Have I confused this that bad in such a short period of time? What's the point he's making? Look again. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers.
Basically, what Paul is doing in these few verses, for really the first time, is clarifying the difference between what the Jews would have considered to be their path toward righteousness by following traditions, shall we say, the letter of the law. And Paul's basically saying that that's not what the spirit of the law was all about. And if you're not going to follow what the law was intended to lay forth for you, then you are not going to be justified. Now look at these Gentiles. If they are doing what the spirit of the law was intending to do, then they are going to be justified through that same type of obedience to God that he had originally intended.
Well said.
By contrast, they'll also be condemned, just like the Jews would, if they're not going to follow the spirit.
That's exactly right. I think that's exactly what he's saying. It matters how you live your life in some way. It matters. It makes a difference. Yes, sir.
Saying you by nature, the Gentiles, what was right and what was wrong. And when they did what was right, then they would be justified.
That's exactly right.
And we should know that today.
That's exactly right. The Gentiles did not have this special revelation that the Jews had, which they thought made them so special. But did the Gentiles know about all those immoral and unrighteous evil acts back in chapter 1? Did they know that was wrong? They knew those things were wrong. How?
By nature.
By nature. Their conscience, and Paul's going to talk about this, is going to be their guide. All right? They were accountable. Now, is your conscience an infallible guide? No, what can you do to your conscience? You can sear it. You can suppress the truth. But don't think that it isn't something that God created to help, to guide, to help you know that there are certain things you cannot do and be right. See, look, I don't have to have any law given to me. No law. It doesn't matter where I was born, under what standard I was raised. It is an absolute universal natural principle. You cannot go and forcefully steal from somebody else. I can't go and just to go to Brother Patton's house and just take his car. And as much as I like that antique that Brother Warren drives, it's not right for me to go take it. You can't do that. I don't need what the Jews had to tell me. Right? None of us do. But the Gentiles, when they live by that standard and they allow their conscience to guide them and to not do the things that the Jews who have this revealed law do, the Gentiles then what? They stand in judgment of the Jews. They are the ones who stand in contrast to how the Jews are living their life. All right? So, good. Again, emphasizing those who will be just before God are those who are going to be obedient to him. And being a Jew did not in and of itself make them righteous. All right. Now, we kind of covered this already in verse 14. Let me just get to where we actually should be. All right. We made that point as well. But we didn't look at verse, we did read verse 15. Oh, I got a couple of hands up before we go into it. Johnny? I think he makes the case in both. And back in chapter 1, he makes the case about the nature of creation. All right? That should have driven and pointed the Gentiles that there is a higher, more powerful standard than us. We're not supreme here. But then there's also the natural understanding of man, our mind, that separates us from every other created entity in this world. We have a conscience. And so we know, therefore, by nature, the things that are right and moral and the things that aren't. You can't steal and murder. It's wrong to cheat and to lie. And we'll get into that if we have the time, not very long from now. So, but good point. Yes, sir. I think that you're exactly right. We're all, I think you have done it. I think we've all done it. We're all very legalistic in our understanding of what of these concepts. Paul's not just talking to the Jews here. He's talking to us as well. Yes, sir.
I just wanted to say that, you know, the big example of that shows what Jesus was trying to teach was the story of the Good Samaritan. The Samaritan had in his heart, that was what God intended in nature to help that poor person.
Very good point. It's a good illustration of that point. Yes, sir.
Jesus had said that number one is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Second is like to love your neighbor as yourself, the royal law. That was a law, and I think what he's talking about here, that even the Gentiles should have understood, to not steal but not covet, to not take what don't belong to you, treat your neighbor as yourself. That was a universal law that everybody understands. You, right. You want to be treated, you want to treat your neighbor like you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And so I think the law that he's talking about here to the Gentiles is that, if that was in their heart, that they were to treat their neighbor as yourself, then they were actually fulfilling the law. That's what he said, that it's all wrapped.
Good point. And I think that is another illustration of this universal principle. All right? I'm probably just going to, at this point, forget the PowerPoint. We're just going to leave it be where it is. And let's just try to cover the passages to try to get as far as we can into chapter through 2. All right? So, anyways, when he gets to the point He talks about in verse 15, they show the works of the law written on their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and their thoughts alternately accusing or else defending them. Does that sound familiar to anything that you heard the Lord say in regards to the Jews? You remember when he talked to them about they were worried about the washing of the hands, the cleansing of the body, the outward body, as a result of what? The law, right? They were worried about making sure they followed the detail and the letter of the law. But they had missed this, what somebody said, the weightier provisions of the heart. Okay? Jesus said that to the Jews back in Matthew chapter 15. The objective of this is that on the day when, according to my gospel, God's going to judge the secrets and of men through Christ Jesus. Why does he throw this out there and conclude this section on the law about speaking to the Jews about God's going to judge the secrets of men?
Because the traditions of the law would have been something that anyone could observe, but the heart is known only to God.
That's exactly right. That's exactly the point he's saying. You remember Jesus again condemns the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23. The whole chapter is just a litany of condemnations. And this one, he said, he compares them to what? Whitewashed tombs full of dead bones. You've got the outward. Yeah, you look good outwardly. But inwardly, you're evil. You're corrupt. So don't think that these outward things that you're doing to follow the letter of the law of Moses are going to make you right. That's not what does it. And again, he uses the Gentiles in regards to that contrast. Those Gentiles do those things of the heart, which you violate. Okay, now in verse 17, he starts out with his diatribe again. And let's read 17 through 22. But if you bear the name Jew and rely upon the law and you boast in God and you know his will and approve the things that are essential, being instructed out of the law, and are confident that you yourself are a blind or a guide to the blind, a light to those who are in darkness, a corrector of the foolish, a teacher of the immature, having in the law the embodiment of knowledge and of the truth, you therefore who teach another, do you teach yourself? You who preach that one should not steal, do you steal? You who say that one should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? Now, going back up to verse 17, all the way through verse 20, he uses descriptive phrases. Who would have used those phrases to describe the Jews? The Jews would have, right? If you bear the name Jew, this is the first time he specifically uses, since he started his diatribe at the beginning of chapter 2, he identifies them by name. So he says, if you bear the name Jew, and you rely upon the law, you boast in God, you know his will, you approve the things that are essential, being instructed out of the law, and you're confident that you yourselves are a guide to the blind, a light to those in darkness, a corrector of the foolish, a teacher of the immature. If you, as a Jew, you say that you are all of those things, but then he pulls up three sins. What about those three sins are pertinent to why Paul would hold them up, talk about them here? It kind of covers a broad range. What was the primary accusations? If you kind of had to sum everything up and how the Jews would have categorized the guilt and sin of the Gentiles, what would have they said? They're a bunch of lying, thieving, immoral, adulterous, idolaters, and pagans. That's how they would have described them. They did. That's how the Jews looked at the Gentiles. Okay? They were liars. They stole. They committed all kinds of acts of immorality. And they worshipped all these idols. They don't even know the true God. And Paul brings up these three for a very good reason. Because what's the point he's going to make to the Jews?
They've done the same thing.
You do the exact same thing. The exact same thing. Look what he says. Look in John chapter 8. Flip over there with me. There are three passages. Here's why the Jews did that. Because look, he says in verse 19, you are confident that you are the guide to the blind. Well, why did the Jews think they were the guide? Where was their confidence? That's right. Look at John chapter 9, verse 28. Jesus is having a dialogue here with the Jews. And they respond to him and say, they reviled him in chapter 9, verse 28. You are his... No, this is the blind man. I'm sorry. They say to the blind man, you are his disciple. Speaking of the blind man to being the disciple of Jesus. But we are the disciples of who? Moses. Back in chapter 8, flip back over there. Here's where they had the dialogue with Jesus. And they say to Jesus, when Jesus is again condemning them, they say, they say to Jesus, Abraham is our father. We are descendants of Abraham. And Jesus said, if you were the children of Abraham, you would do the deeds of Abraham. Over again into John chapter 9, verse 41. Jesus says to them, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But since you say you see, your sin remains. What does he mean? That kind of sums up what Paul is getting at. What was the mindset of the Jews? Why would they describe themselves this way? That's exactly right. Good point, Ed. They believed that their confidence in their righteousness was because of who they were, because they were the descendants of Abraham. They had the sign of circumcision. They were the keepers of the law. Their confidence was in all the wrong things. That was their problem. And then Paul says to him, you therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that you should not steal, do you steal? You who say that one should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? Look at what Paul's saying. Now, what if the Jews just blatantly gone out and been robbing, lying thieves like they accused the Gentiles? What, have they done that? Oh, no, that's not what they're being accused of being guilty of. But what practices would the Jews have done? What things did they do that were lying, deceitful thieves? Good point. Look, but before we, I know we're done, but look, I just want you to get this point. The Jews, did they have dishonest business practices? Yes, they did. They were condemned by Jesus for that. Can you imagine the Jews being the ones who would say, oh, I'm not living in adultery. I have what? From Moses. I have a certificate of divorce. You Gentiles don't have this. We do, but hey, I'm not in adultery. About the idols? They would often, and we don't even have time to get into this, but they would sometimes benefit from the pagan worship. Remember, the eating of meats is going to be a big deal, a big point of contention and division. They would take the benefits of the pagan worship with not actually saying, well, we're participating, we're faking, we're worshiping the idol. But they would take the benefits of it. All right, thank you very much for your participation. We didn't get through it. We're going to be real quick at the end of this on Wednesday night, get into chapter 3. Thank you for your time.